Catherine Feeney on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
Come on, boy. Come on. Do you love your dog? Of course you do. If you ask any pet owner if they love their pets, you'll almost certainly hear a affirmative yes. An affirmative yes. But does your pet love you? That's an interesting question. Because love sort of relates to a human experience of emotion. But a human experience that pet owners often share with their pet is that of conversation. Sitting down, talking, having a conversation with your pet. Telling them about your thoughts, your feelings. I wonder why you do that. Why talk to someone something, you know, depending on how you feel about your dog, that can't talk back to you, that can't articulate how they're feeling about your feelings? Why do you put all this effort into sharing your feelings, your thoughts with something, someone, a dog, maybe your car, the wall, that can't join that conversation with you, can't respond, can't share feelings of their own? We're going to look at this from a neurological perspective in just a moment, but I'm keen to hear from you on 1300 222 612. That's 1300 222 612. If you do talk to your pet, I'd love to hear what you talk with them about. Is it feelings? Is it what happened in your day? Let me know. 1300 222 612. And I want to introduce you to your guest this afternoon, Tom Byrne, an associate professor with the Queensland Brain Institute. And Tom, we're going to talk about talking to pets and inanimate objects, I should say, in a moment. But you were born in Jamaica.
Yes, I was.
That's cool. So this is kind of like, you're feeling it.
Love it. Yeah.
Excellent. Do you have a pet, Tom?
So I have to declare a conflict of interest. Okay. Yes, I do have
a
dog.
Have a pet. Excellent.
A pet, and it's a dog, and she's a six-month-old border collie called Rosie.
Right. Can I ask, as you are a neuroscientist, why do we talk to our pets when we know they cannot talk back to us?
Well, having gone through the lived experience, I talk to Rosie because I'm assuming she understands what I think, and I assume she knows everything I'm thinking. Turns out she probably doesn't, and she can't understand English. But there are some words, sit, fetch, stay, roll over, that she gets, but that's through training, the tone of my voice and the pitch of my voice. So I remember learning a long time ago that if you speak in a low voice, they'll find that aggressive, and a higher voice, they'll find that more receptive. But you actually have to say the right words with a higher voice for them to understand certain words, but they certainly don't understand language.
Why would we be motivated to discuss things with a pet then, given that either we know they don't understand us, or we also know that they can't talk back to us?
So
why are we motivated?
There's a phrase that I heard recently, it's called fur baby.
Okay.
So a lot of people treat their pets like fur babies. And so if you think about babies, we know that they can't talk back to us. But everybody talks to babies, particularly with sort of cooing, lots of vowels, oohs, ahs. And when people first meet puppies and kittens, they talk in the same sort of baby talk. And turns out that that's really important. If you make eye contact with the dog and you use those cooing sounds, they will make eye contact with you, and both the human and the dog will have a release of oxytocin, the love drug.
Oh, great.
And so we have these bonds based on eye contact and these soothing words. And so when you talk to a baby, you know they can't talk back, but we still do it. So I think we're hardwired to talk to cute, small things,
right,
which include babies and fur babies.
And fur babies. But with a child, with a human child, I mean, I certainly know that I was thinking about trying to help my daughter develop language. And that was one reason that I would speak with her. I'm not trying to help my pet develop human language.
So
or am I?
You are trying to help them understand when you talk to them. So I think the world record for dogs is they can understand about 200 words. They can't put them into sentences. Obviously, they can't talk to us. But I think an average human who's been to university might have a language of maybe about 50,000 words. So it's not on the same level as people, but they will understand distinct words in particular contexts. So you are teaching them words like sit, stop barking, stay, fetch. And given your actions, hand actions, and your voice and your tone, they will learn those cues to then understand the correct response.
And show you they understand, perhaps. And maybe that's why we keep coming back for more. Jackie in Stafford, you have a beloved... Is it a fur baby? Do you call your pup a fur baby?
Yes, she's a fur baby.
Gorgeous. Okay, so I understand you talk with your dog. What do you talk with your dog about? What's her name, sorry, or his name?
Her name's Skelly.
Skelly. What do you and Skelly discuss?
So if she's been home and I've been at work, I'll come home and we'll discuss her day and my day. Usually she responds with a little bit of a continuous howling, and I'm like, are you sure? Does that really happen? Are you telling me lies? And what did your, you know, sister say about that? And she'll tilt her head and it's just like, oh, you know, and we go. But she understands. We do have like the eye contact and she'll tilt her head. And she's very, you know, if you're sad or upset, she becomes very much like a human, I guess, and wants to comfort you and puts a little head on the lap and just looks at you as like, you know, it's okay, Mum. It's okay.
That is gorgeous, Jackie. Thank you so much for your call. Jackie in Stafford. You're on ABC Radio Brisbane and Gold Coast, and you're with Tom Byrne, who's with the Queensland Brain Institute, neuroscientist. And I mean, that's, Jackie kind of puts a beautiful point on it, doesn't she, Tom, with regards to why we talk to pets, knowing when they cannot talk back to us, because they do respond, show understanding and empathy?
Well, there's a bit of research looking at empathy, intelligence, social cognition, theory of mind, and I think the jury's still out. It is certainly true that when we talk to dogs, rather than talk back, but they give us feedback in terms of facial expressions and body language, and they're extremely good at reading our body position and our emotions. And so as a companion animal, that's why they're so useful for people who are perhaps alone or elderly, because they're so responsive. It's a really warm social interaction that would be the equivalent of interacting with another human being. So whether it's a dog or a human, that companionship is almost equally as beneficial to the dog and to the human.
Making the old grey matter light up in the same kind of responsive ways.
Absolutely.
Fireworks up top. What about then inanimate objects? I have been known to talk to my car. And a lot of people talk to their cars, right? Don't leave me on a limb here.
I think that is...
The car cannot respond at all.
So there has been a bit of research on this, and it turns out if your car is highly predictable, you talk to it less. If it's more unreliable, you talk to it more. So if your car is breaking down or being troublesome, then you're more likely to talk to it and give it human-like qualities. So a lot of the research shows that if something is more variable and random, you're more likely to give it human-like qualities than if it's very stable and static and boring.
Wow. Okay. I'm so interested about...
You're not crazy if you talk to your car.
No, thank you. That's what I'm looking for. Okay. So when we talk to inanimate objects, what are we motivated by? We're not looking for understanding and empathy. What are we doing then?
So... It's a little bit difficult to answer that question. If someone doesn't have a broad social network, talking to something is usually better than not talking to anything.
Right.
And they've done research on people who have extensive social networks, and they tend to talk less to pets and inanimate objects. So it's something about we have a need to communicate, and whether or not it's a car or another person, that need drive is very strong.
What about the reflection in the bathroom mirror?
So we have self-awareness. And so we know that it's us, and talking to us can be a very soothing, calming thing because we're aware that it's us. Just on that point, if you place a bit of ink on your forehead and have a look in a mirror, you know that the ink is on your forehead. If you do that with a chimpanzee, they do the same thing. They've done similar experiments with dogs. Dogs don't seem to recognize themselves in mirrors. So we don't think they have that level of self-awareness.
Oh, it's fascinating stuff. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time this afternoon, Tom, so we'll have to leave it there, but I'd love to continue conversations along these lines with you in the future. Thank
That'd
you for joining us
Thank
today.
Thank you very much.
Tom Byrne, Associate Professor with the Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland, and a neuroscientist, and from Jamaica, and a proud Border Collie owner.
You're listening to Catherine Feeney on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.